following contains language of a frank and explicit nature. Discretion is advised.
This is Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Bernie Sapleggi.
The two of you were under restraining orders to stay away from each other.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Well, you're going to get it now.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models, specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Top Hat Entertainment, helping you with all your party needs from DJs to inflatables. They have it all. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining the right mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering within a 10-mile radius of Taft Corners.
Taft Corners is in Williston.
Try them for your next wing order, too. 879-1000.
You need to start throwing bombs, baby!
This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN.
Living the dream, baby, living the dream.
We are living the dream, and we're taking you with us. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. I'm your host, Jeff Paul. Bernie Sapleggi is out this week, so NBC5's Jack Cordy is in with us this morning. What's up, man?
Yeah, I am not Bernie.
No, you are not. Much shorter, which is good because I wear eye level. You know, I like that.
That's nice. It makes it easy to talk like this.
It does.
It's good to be here.
It does. I'm glad to have you. We've got a lot to talk about, and let me just say this. We have had a chance to talk to a lot of great people and very famous people on this radio show over the years. But there is nothing like our guest right now. You want to give him a little tease on what's coming on right now? You want to play that little tease?
Oh, 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
On the Tick Doctor's guest line right now, live here on Sports Saturday, we have the great Mike Aruzioni. Mike, good morning, buddy. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Good morning. No problem. How you guys doing?
We're doing so well. So, Mike, let's get right into it. I know you're a busy guy, obviously, in the middle of the Olympics. You played on arguably the most iconic American sports team ever that's transcended so much time. I mean, do you ever look back at your gold medal winner, the captain of the team, you score the winning goal against Russia, or the USSR back in those days, I guess. I mean, do you ever just kind of pinch yourself and think, wow? I mean, I'm not talking about just Olympic team, Mike. I'm talking about any professional team. I think this 1980 hockey team transcends all of those.
Well, I just think it's a very proud moment in my life and my teammates' life. But to be a part of something like that, to experience it the way we did in your own country, to win an Olympic gold medal, I guess you can look back and just, again, like I said, feel very proud of how hard we worked to accomplish something so special.
Now, the movie comes out, Miracle. Now, you were a part of that movie, if I'm correct, right? You had a part of getting that thing getting going. Is that the correct thing to say there?
No, I had nothing to do with it. I didn't want to be involved in the movie because I felt if I was involved and all of a sudden my role was different, the guys in the team would have went, oh, okay, now you got such a big piece in the movie because you were helping out. So I totally stayed away, and it's really the Herb Brooks story, and we're a part of it. I think Herb was obviously very involved in what was going on, and it was done well. It was a nice, movie. I tell people the HBO documentary, I think, is better than the movie. The movie's enjoyable and people enjoy watching it.
Mike, do appearances like this on a local radio show ramp up during the Winter Olympics like this every 4 years? Do you get calls from people like us saying, hey, we want to have you on and talk about this?
Yeah, I tend to get fairly busy. I'm actually leaving after this to go do something in Boston and for Fox and Friends. You do get a little busy, and I don't know if you've been following it as well during the Olympic Games. There's been the commercial that's being run for Ancestry.com that myself and four of my teammates did. We did the DNA testing to see, where our roots are, and it's turned out to be a lot of fun for me and my teammates to do a commercial like that. We've never done anything like that. And the theory behind it was to celebrate America's greatness and see that we're all diversified. We all come from different parts of the world, even though we're American athletes. So that's been something I've been talking about a lot lately and doing a lot of ads regarding that.
We are talking to Mike Aruzioni here on Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com here in Burlington, Vermont. Mike, you know, watching the movie and reading articles, there was a real rivalry with between BU and Minnesota back in those days as two of the major powerhouses. Was there really initially a rivalry on the ice with you guys, the guys that were coming from Minnesota and the guys that were coming from Boston?
Well, that was prior to 1980. If you go back my junior year at Boston University, we played the University of Minnesota in the first round of the Frozen Four and had a bench-clearing brawl with the team. Police had to come out on the ice. It was pretty nasty. And then 2 years later at the Olympic Festival, Team Minnesota and Team Massachusetts had a bench-clearing brawl in the warm-up. So there was a rivalry, but that never existed once the team was picked. We realized that we were all one team, and we actually even had fun with it.
Now, Herb Brooks, obviously a legendary motivator and a legendary coach. Talk about what it was like to have him be your head coach.
Well, you know, he was a lot like Jack Parker, who was my head coach at Boston University. You know, they both had a passion to coach and teach. And, you know, Herb was intense. He pushed you. He demanded a lot out of you. But that's how coaches coached in that era. And, you know, here's the scenario. You can yell and scream at me all you want. I'm not quitting. So, you know, that's the side of Herb that sometimes was a little demanding to play for. But the end result was off the charts. And we had a tremendous trust and respect in Herb as a head coach. We believed in what he was doing. And he had the right players for the, you know, what he was trying to do and trying to accomplish. So, like I said, he was a brilliant coach, but demanding, but that's the era of the 70s. That's how coaches coached.
There was a part in the movie, my favorite part. I mean, Jack, have you seen the movie Miracle?
No,
I get goosebumps when I see the part. I don't know where you guys were playing. This isn't the movie, but you didn't play very well, and Herbs gets the whole team out on the ice and makes you guys do, you're going back and forth for, it looks like, hours, and you're beat, and your character in the movie yells out, you know, Mike Aruzioni, and he looks at you and says, who do you play for? And you say, the United States of America. Did that happen? And I hope it did, because yeah. I love that part of that movie.
Well, let me explain it this way. We absolutely skated.
Yeah.
we skated for about an hour and 15 minutes after the game doing Herbies. In the movie, they have all 20 guys skating, but there were only 16 of us that skated that night because that's all that dressed. But I'm a smart guy, and I think I would have figured that out after the first two or three Herbies. It wouldn't have taken an hour and 15 minutes.
So you're named captain. Talk about that. What an honor. I mean, again, I, you know, look, I know you, this is your life, so for you it's probably no big deal, but for a sports guy like us, like Jack and I, that see here talk about this, you know, it's like I said, you're an iconic athlete to us. I mean, you get named captain of this team, you score the winning goal. Talk about both those things. First of all, getting the gold medal, scoring the winning goal, and being named captain of this team.
Well, I think let's start with winning the gold medal. I mean, that's off the charts. Everything we had worked for and trained for and sacrificed, and, you know, had come to fruition. You know, we won the whole thing despite the fact that nobody thought we had a chance to win. So when you're able to accomplish something like that as a team, it's pretty special. As far as the game-winning goal against the Soviets, you know, it's nice looking back that I got it, but if it wasn't for Mark Johnson, who knows where we would have been, or Billy Baker and the huge goal that he scored to tie Sweden. So when you look at team success, everybody contributes, everybody helps out, everybody does something at some point that enables you to win, whether it's blocking a shot, making a save, or scoring a goal. So, you know, I was fortunate in my situation to be in the right position to help my team and score a goal that turned out to be the winning goal. And as far as being the captain, you know, I was a captain amongst captains. I've said this many times. Jack O'Callaghan was a two-time captain at Boston University. Mark Johnson and Bobby Sutter were captains at Wisconsin. Billy Baker was captain at Minnesota. Morrow and Wells were captains at Bowling Green. Harrington and Pavlich were captains at Minnesota Duluth. So if you looked at that team and did any research, I probably think of the 20 guys, 17 or 18 were captains of their colleges or their high schools.
Mike, I kind of want to talk to you about that college hockey aspect of what we're seeing in the Olympics now, and kind of get your perspective on this, because for a long time, or at least a couple decades, it was NHL players. And now, you know, we're seeing this weird mix of professional players that have played in the NHL and played overseas and now play for the USA. And we're seeing four or five collegiate athletes now on Team USA. What are your thoughts on the mix of professional and collegiate players, and what would you like to see compete for Team USA in the future?
Well, you know, obviously I'd like to see the NHL players compete, and I said this years ago. I wasn't sure if I would have said that. I love the college players competing in the Olympic Games, and, you know, the 6 months of training and doing what we did in 1980, because I was curious if the NHL players would go after each other in the middle of the season, knowing they have a full season left, or half a season left to play. So after watching them compete and seeing the skill level, I was totally blown away and totally supportive of the pro players going over. Now, having said all that, this year they changed their mind and decide not to go, and I totally support the players that are there. This is a great opportunity for them to showcase their skills. And, you know, these guys wouldn't have had a chance if the pro players were playing. So, you know, we had to put a team together. I think if I look back on it, and I think maybe even USA Hockey would like to have done it this way, is if the NHL made their decision earlier, and didn't wait so long, maybe we would have put a whole team of college players together. They would have done what we did in 1980, where they train, take a year off of school, train for 6 months, and go over to the Olympic Games and compete. But because they waited so long, they had to put a roster together. And we have an abundance of talent now. The depth pool of USA Hockey is a lot better. So we have a group of players playing over there professionally in Europe. And then they were able to grab the four, maybe top players in their mind that were college players, to go over and play. So support them and hope they perform well, whatever team's going to be there. But I think the NHL players clearly is what the world wants to see.
Mike, do you find that the Olympics aren't, in 1980, that you just mentioned that you guys took a year off, you're training for 6 months, do you find that these athletes aren't as in tune towards the Olympics as, say, you guys were back in your day?
Oh, no, I think these athletes are all excited about being on the Olympic team. You know, I know some of the guys that are playing, there's four Boston University guys that are there playing, and I know they were excited about, you know, this opportunity for them. So, you know, anytime you get a chance to represent your country, whether it's the Olympics or the World Championships, I think these players cherish that and take great pride in that.
Mike, I know you only have a minute with you left. Do you have any memories of coming up here and playing in Burlington at UVM? Did you ever play at Gutterson Fieldhouse?
Oh, I remember it. It was insane. It made you play better. People think, you know, you go up there and you get intimidated by playing with the crowd. I thought it made us play better because you wanted to show them and shut them up and compete against them. So we had some great battles. And, you know, I remember walking. You used to have to put your skates on in one room, and then you'd have to walk through the crowd to go onto the ice. And you just took a ton of abuse. And, you know, two of my really close friends at the time, and I talk about this with them, and I just talked about it last week, Tom McNamara, who was a goaltender there, and Tom Colby. I remember we played up there at Vermont, and we won the game. I think we won 3-2. It was a great game. And after the game was over, we went to one of the campus bars where the players hang out, and the place was absolutely crazy. So I said to Tom Colby, I said, Tom, what happens when you guys win? And it's just a great place to play, and I love playing there. The ice was fast. Competition was really good. My first year at BU, they were Division II, I believe. Then they became a Division I program as I think I started to wind down my college career. But it's a great place to play, and it's always a hard place to win.
Mike Ruzioni, it's an honor to talk to you. Thanks for taking the time, buddy. Enjoy the rest of the Olympics, and maybe we'll touch base with you sometime down the road. Thanks so much.
You got it. Thanks,
all right,
guys.
The great Mike Ruzioni. How about that?
Huh? That's fantastic.
I mean, it's just amazing. And I'll tell you what. I mean, and again, you know, talking to him, you can tell he's like, yeah, you know, and he, you know, it, you know, to him, this is his life. You know, this is what he did for, this is what he did. He's Mike Ruzioni. This happened way back then. You can see he's just a very kind, thanks to other people. But man, I mean, what a moment. I mean, he really is the face of that team. A lot of all-stars on that team, a lot of personalities, Jack, but Mike Ruzioni is the face of that 1980 team.
And I'm really impressed with him that he's still willing and able to talk about it 38 years later. I'm sure it's, you know, the highlight of his life. It's got to be the highlight of his life, right?
Yeah, I mean, besides maybe children or wife or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Sports, definitely.
I would absolutely think that.
But the fact that he's still, you know, doing this and ramping it up every Winter Olympics like this, I mean, it's special to be able to talk to him about, you know, one of the most iconic, if not the most iconic moment in U.S. sports history.
I mean, I said, you know, it's funny. I was talking to my dad earlier this week. I said, Dad, you're not going to believe who we're going to have on the show, Mike Ruzioni. I mean, it's exciting. And I said, truth be told, I don't know of another team that transcends time like this team does. Like, you know, if you're a Yankee fan or you're a Red Sox fan or a Giants fan or a Patriots fan, like, you know, yeah, you're a fan, But you know, you have to really think back to say what year your team, it was your favorite year that they won. You know, 1980, Lake Placid, you know, Aaron played the little clip of Al Michaels saying, you know, play it again. Let's listen to that one more time. You got that again. I mean, this is iconic.
You believe in miracles? Yes!
I mean, to this moment, you get chills listening to that. You know what I mean? And I mean, it transcends time, and I think it will forever. It's the greatest sports moment in U.S. history. I truly believe that.
And we've still got Al Michaels doing his thing, obviously, all over the sports landscape.
I know.
And I'm sure the fact that he's still doing his thing 38 years later or whatever, but that's... No, I was talking to someone about it yesterday as well, actually last night, and they hadn't seen Miracle, but they knew all about the team.
Of course.
You know, they knew all about the team, and this is someone who's young, and the 1980 gold medal team, one of the best, if not the best, upset of all time.
655-6672 is the number to call to get in the conversation, 802-655-6672, or you can join us on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. All right, we're going to change it now. We're going to go from a winter sport to a hot sport. Because it's going to be summertime soon. The Red Sox are ramped up down in Fort Myers. We've got Jen McCaffrey to talk Sox live from Red Sox camp. Don't go anywhere. Jeff Paul and Jack Cordy, NBC5's Jack Cordy, live here on Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Jack, how's it going, buddy?
Oh, well, man.
Good to see you, buddy.
Saturday morning?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Wait till we tell you. Next segment, we'll talk about how you and I met.
That'll be fun.
Because that's kind of a neat story.
That's called the tease.
That's a tease. And the biz, that's called the
and
tease?
And the biz, that's the
I just,
tease.
Aaron, did you hear that? I just did a tease on the radio. That's my first tease.
Z.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Thank you very much. You might want to write that down, the date and the time. Hey, listen, just talk to Mike Ruzioni. What a chat that was. I mean, that's just like, you know.
You don't really wake up on a Saturday morning and expect to talk to the 1980 Olympics gold medal team captain.
Exactly. I mean, in the face of that team, by the way. But anyway, what a great conversation we had with Mike. We appreciate the call. But now let's change a little bit and talk some baseball. Because listen, spring training started. Can you believe that?
No. Where did winter go?
Well, I'm glad it's here. I mean, I'm trying to figure out what happened to summer 2 years ago. So I'm still like on that. Okay, the fact that you're wondering where this winter went. I mean, summer's too fast, goes by too fast. But now, here we go. We're going to spring training. The Red Sox down in Fort Myers are rocking and rolling. And who better to talk to about the Sox than our good friend from MassLive.com and the Springfield Republican, Red Sox beat writer Jen McCaffrey. Good morning, Jen.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
I mean, you might have the coolest job, right? I mean, nobody, you get to hang out in Fort Myers all like February and March. Does it get any better than that for you?
It's pretty nice to be down here and away from the snow right now. I can't lie about that.
So what are you, like mid-70s right now? Like blue sunshine, palm trees? This is truly, Jack, this is what I picture when I talk to Jen when she's down in spring training. She's like sitting in one of the, you know, the stadium chairs, feet up, you know, cup of coffee, you know, just nice 65, 70 degree weather, just, you know, waiting for the guys to come out. I mean, is that kind of where we're at, Jen? Is that what we're doing here this morning?
You're pretty close, except it's like 85, almost 90. So.
That is right up my alley.
At 10:30 a.m.?
I'm all in for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like pretty warm pretty early down here the first few days I've been here, so that's kind of been a surprising. Lots of sunscreen.
All right, let's get into this. Last year at this time we had you on, and the Red Sox were the hottest thing in baseball. Everybody was talking about a potential World Series championship, and this year, for whatever reason, I feel like the talk has been, obviously, with what's happened in New York, Houston wins the World Series, and people are kind of looking at this Red Sox team. I don't know if they're kind of flying under the radar a little bit, but what's your perspective right now on what the Sox mentality is, or what the national mentality is about the Red Sox?
Yeah, you know, I think that has a lot to do with the fact that they didn't really make any moves this offseason. You know, that you know, they didn't add the J.D. Martinez, or they haven't yet. And, you know, we have that Eduardo Nunez potential signing that's still sort of pending the physical. But, yeah, they didn't really make any splashy moves, and they're basically bringing back the same exact team. And, you know, while it was a team that got them into the playoffs and was first in the division, you know, they lost in the first round and kind of underachieved for the expectations that everyone set out for them. So I think that's why they're kind of maybe not the most exciting, or, you know, the most talked about team right now. And obviously the Astros coming off of what they did last year, and of course what the Yankees added in Stanton, you know, that's kind of why, you know, Boston is kind of where it is right now, I guess, in the national landscape. So, and of course, last year they added Sale. And so there's just not that kind of big thing heading into camp that you're looking at with them this year.
J.D. Martinez was connected with the Red Sox all offseason, mm-hmm. and it seems like it's cooled off. I mean, is there still a buzz that's going to get done for Boston?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is with him is, you know, who's going to pay him? Who else can afford to pay him, you know, the money that he wants? And the Red Sox aren't going to bid against themselves. I think that they've kind of made that pretty clear. They have that five-year offer and about $100, $125 million that we've seen reported. No other team can really afford to throw that at him. So, I mean, Arizona is the only other team, really, that we've heard that might be in the mix, but again, that their payroll flexibility isn't as great as the Red Sox. So, yeah, I mean, it's still an option that's out there. But you know, if the Red Sox aren't willing to budge and Jason Martinez is kind of sticking with what he wants, then maybe he'll go into the season, you know, not even signing with the team. Who knows? So, you know, obviously the Nunez stuff kind of throws the Martinez thing a little bit for a loop because we don't really know how much that contract is for officially yet. So how much does that kind of take away from what they can give Martinez? So it's a little bit still, you know, obviously early in spring training, still a little unsettled with kind of where some of these additions are going to be coming from.
Jen, are these lower expectations for the Red Sox a good thing for this team, considering how last year ended, the win-now mentality and the fact that New York is making moves and getting a guy like Stanton? Is this a good thing that they're heading into 2018 with, you know, we're still good, we can still compete, but people aren't really looking at us as the team to beat?
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, I think a lot of these guys in the clubhouse thrive off of that, you know, chip on my shoulder type thing. Earlier in the week, you know, we talked to Mookie and Xander, who said that, you know, maybe the club didn't really handle some of the issues they had last season as well as they could have. And we just talked to Pedroia about an hour ago. He just arrived in camp, and he sort of agreed with that. And so I think that, you know, kind of coming in with that mentality of that they kind of have to prove that, you know, they had this seemingly good enough team but couldn't, you know, get too far or, you know, couldn't produce the offensive numbers that they, you know, were expected to. I think they kind of have this, like I said, sort of chip on their shoulder to sort of prove to people that, you know, they can be as good as they are on paper.
You mentioned you just talked to Dustin Pedroia. I mean, he's coming off some major surgery. I mean, what kind of player are we going to expect him to be this year, and when are we going to see him on the field?
Yeah, so he was pretty upbeat, you know, kind of a little bit more jovial than we've seen him in the past. But he said that, you know, the surgery really kind of took away all the pain that he had. He said he was really struggling, and we saw it, obviously, at the end of last season. So he said he's feeling a ton better, and now he's sort of still in that rehab process. He said he's running on, like, a treadmill that kind of takes your body weight, I guess lessens the body weight impact onto the treadmill. So once he kind of builds up to kind of running on his full body weight, then he can kind of progress the workouts. I don't foresee him being ready for the start of the season, you know, and I don't think that he was really projected to be ready for the start of the season. Maybe sometime in May, but I mean, by the time he kind of ramps up and starts workouts and then eventually has to get into games and all that, and this is assuming there's no setbacks, that's going to take a little while. So you know, it's pretty major surgery, adding in some, I'm not exactly sure how they do it, but basically adding in some cartilage that because it had pretty much been torn away. So he is, you know, 33, going to be 34. So we have to kind of factor that kind of stuff into it too. But yeah, he seems, you know, he seems like he's rare to go and kind of ready to, you know, jump into things once he's allowed to. Yeah, it seems like he'll be kind of getting going as soon as he can.
Jen, I know it's early, but what have you seen from Alex Cora so far that you like? How will this team look differently under his leadership this year?
Yeah, I mean, it feels a little bit more just kind of relaxed, maybe. Guys are, you know, a lot of the guys have just obviously mentioned his age and just sort of, you know, closeness to the game. And speaking of Pedroia, obviously Pedroia was pretty much raised by Cora when Cora was with the Red Sox when Pedroia was a rookie. So there's that closeness there. They've been really tight for many years. But just, yeah, I think that the guys feel maybe that they can just relax a little bit more. And it feels that's been, that's something that they're kind of maybe like looking forward to. And just a lot of them have talked about is focusing on having more fun. A lot of them were saying that they've just kind of put too much pressure on themselves last year. So that's, you know, Cora, I feel like Cora's kind of got this, I won't say laid back, but just a little bit more relaxed, again, you know, demeanor about him. And, you know, he's still learning a lot. You know, he's willing to admit that he doesn't know some of the, you know, younger guys on the team or, you know, minor leaguers on the team in the clubhouse. And he's not coming in here pretending like he knows everything. So, yeah, it's going to be a spring training where there's tons of new faces, obviously the coaching staff as well. So everybody's kind of learning everybody, but you know, this is obviously the time to do it.
Jen, another question with the Red Sox is David Price. You know, last year was a rough year for David Price. Obviously the situation that happened with, you know, some of the media with Eckersley and then the way he pitched, injuries, but looked really strong in the playoffs coming out of the bullpen. What are you seeing with David Price so far in camp?
Yeah, Price kind of had like a sit-down interview with all of us earlier in the week and pretty much said that, like some of the other guys have said, he didn't handle some situations last year well, and he kind of alluded to the fact that, you know, the X situation kind of messed things up for some of the guys in the clubhouse. So I think he's trying to – he seems a little bit more I guess maybe more at peace with just kind of not creating or trying to not be as much of a distraction. He said one of the things that kind of stuck out that he said, he's trying to be a faucet and not a drain, which we all kind of laughed at a little bit, but it makes sense when you kind of use that analogy with him, because it was sort of a drain of dealing with, the day in and day out drama, of that last season with him. So he seems a little bit more, he said he thought about it a lot this off season and kind of, you know, he's healthy now and he's kind of just ready to kind of make, you know, start a new fresh start.
How do you think the rivalry between the Yankees and the Red Sox will look this year while, you know, you got Boone with the Yankees and you got Cora with the Red Sox, and they're buddies because they worked in the media together, obviously at ESPN. So how do you feel like that'll shape up? Because, you know, these are two bitter rivals, but the guys leading them are friends.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know necessarily if that'll play so much into it. I think things will be actually maybe a little bit more, you know, ramped up. Like I was saying before, the Red Sox seem to have this sort of chip on their shoulder, if you will, because they are this kind of coming in with people have lower expectations for them, and the Yankees signed Stanton, and they have, you know, Aaron Judge coming off a crazy year, and they have so many of these young guys, Greg Bird, that are kind of pushing them into the limelight. So it's almost a kind of a renewed rivalry in a sense with the Red Sox young core versus the Yankees young core, both, you know, two new managers. So, you know, I think it'll be an interesting just kind of matchup again this year. Maybe just a little bit more juice this year just because there are so many new faces on the coaching side on both sides, and just some of these expectations that people have, you know, how each team's going to look on paper. We'll see kind of how things play out.
It's not your father's Yankee Red Sox rivalry, buddy. It's all new. Jen, thanks so much. Just get the sunscreen on, get another iced tea, you know, put your relax. I'm jealous of your job. I really am.
Yeah, but you'll be there soon. Jeff's actually going down to Florida soon.
I'm heading to Florida, but I'm not going to be hanging out at a ballpark. I got to do, you know, I'm going with my wife. She makes me do like shopping and all that crap. I want to just go drink beers and watch baseball all day. That's what I want to do. But I know that's not what Jen's doing. Jen, thanks so much for taking the time.
Sure thing. No problem. Thanks, guys.
Have a great one. I'm telling you, what a job that's got to be. Like, all right, listen, here's how this is going to work. On February, you know, whatever, 15th, we're going to fly you down for about a month and a half. You're going to cover the team. You're going to go to the press conferences. And she's like, yeah, I mean, everything you're saying is kind of right, only it's like 85 degrees.
Which is more than double what we are here.
Oh, and this weather around here, I don't even know what's going on. I walked out without a jacket thinking it was warm. Yeah. Yesterday it was like 50 degrees. I walk out this morning, it's 13 degrees.
It was snowing last night.
Yeah, but it's a warm snow.
What the heck is a warm snow?
It was a balmy snow.
Okay.
See, you're a Midwest guy. You got to understand the Northeast balmy snow.
Okay.
You can get a little balmy snow once in a while.
We get the wind in the Midwest.
Yeah, yeah, you get a lot
of
that.
You guys have
wind.
Mountains.
All
here,
snow but. Is bad snow, Jeff.
I totally agree with you on that. 100% here. That's why you're the best producer in the business. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more Red Sox, because you kind of have some inside info. You're a big Tigers fan.
I am.
And old Dave Dombrowski was a big wig with the Tigers before he went to Boston.
I know all about what Dave Dombrowski does.
We're going to talk about that when we come back. We are back here on Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. Bernie Siplicki is out today. He's on assignment. So NBC's NBC5's Jack Cordy is in house with us today. Jack, I mean, we just kind of started with Mike Ruzioni and Jim McCaffrey, but how are you, man? How we can talk a little bit.
Yeah, we
can. I mean, my God, we can breathe now.
An electric start.
Unbelievable. That's how you start a game right there. I've always said you got to have a great leadoff hitter. And a good number two hitter, and we just had that. That's like, you know, Chuck Knoblauch and Derek Jeter back to back.
It's
like, how do you beat that? It's unbelievable.
That's the best 1-2 thing you could have had on a Saturday.
You had asked Jen McCaffrey about the Yankee Red Sox rivalry and what she perceived that was going to be with all these new faces in each city. My question to you is, are there any rivalries between all the other sportscasters around? I mean, do you rival with Channel 3 and Fox 44 or whatever, Fox 44 and ABC 22? I mean, are there like battle royals between you guys? When you guys get the games and you guys got your cameras and all your equipment, are you elbowing people out of the way? I mean, are there rivalries there?
Should I play this up or should I tell the truth?
I always prefer the play up. You know what I mean? I mean, let's get something going here, even if it's not true.
Yeah, you know, there's a big beef between us always. We despise each other's looks. You know, every time we walk at the same games. No, honestly, if I'm going to be real, we are all the best of friends.
Yeah.
We are people that like sports. People that like sports tend to be chill, relaxed.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. Maybe that's just me talking about myself.
Of course. So you are pretty chill. You're pretty relaxed.
I try to be.
Yeah, you're pretty relaxed.
So we're always at these games together. And
but you're always also trying to break the stories, right? I mean, you know, you want to, I mean, you really want, I mean, there's got to be some type of like, I have got to get that before him or her. I got to get this scoop.
If I'm going to be real, there's not a whole lot of breaking news in this area. You know, you get to a bigger market, there's other stories going on. But here, you know, I'm not going out there. The object isn't trying to break things. It's kind of just to, you know, get people their highlights, get people what they couldn't get to that day and show them what happened.
Well, we do have some breaking news here. Aaron gave us the information as we were getting ready to talk to Mike Ruzioni, but Anthony Lamb is cleared to play in 2 weeks. Is that the information we just got?
Brady was like, make sure the guys know Anthony Lamb is back in 2 weeks.
All right, well, so our Brady Farkas, 101.3 ESPN's own Brady Farkas is saying that Anthony Lamb is cleared to play in 2 weeks. Anthony Lamb, the star player for UVM men's basketball team. We are going to talk UVM men's hoops with Alex Abrami. But last night I had mentioned in SportsCenter with this UVM team, Jack, I mean, with Rhode Island losing, the A-10's best team, Rhode Island, number the 16th ranked team in the nation, goes on the road to St. Bonaventure, where UVM played St. Bonaventure. Should have beat St. Bonaventure that day. But St. Bonaventure beats Rhode Island, which now UVM now owns the longest winning streak in the country and is the only team in the country at Division I level that's undefeated in their conference. It's unbelievable.
Real quick on Anthony Lamb, I attended John Becker's media session yesterday, and he did share the info there that his foot was healed. His fractured foot was healed, fully healed. At least that's what he had heard from the doctor. It wasn't 100% confirmed, but it was healed. And we didn't receive a timetable, but John, I did ask John, and I asked him, when do you think Lamb could be back? When, you know, do you want to get him in before the playoffs? He said, ideally, yes. I want to get him in before we hit the postseason, but we don't know exactly. So Jeff Goodman, I think, is the one that, from ESPN, is the one that talked to him and said that 2 week timetable, which would just be gigantic for this team that's already rolling. And as you said, the only undefeated team in conference in the country.
It's amazing. And I'll tell you what, and Bernie, I talk about every week about this UVM team. What they've done with this program is spectacular. We had Coach Brennan on last week, and Bernie will come in and say to me once in a while, he'll say, Jesus, these fans of Cat Country, they're mad at this team because they're losing, and you know they get upset with these guys. Look what they're doing. And I said, Bernie, listen for a minute. I said this to Coach Becker on the air, and I said this to Coach Brennan. How amazing is it that there are fans out there now that have the expectation that the University of Vermont can compete for a national championship in basketball? That this program has blown up. I mean, it's gone from a very low mid-major to it's coming to just a mid-major. It's a big-time player in the Division I basketball world, and it's something that we all in this community need to be proud of. It's just a very special team.
They should be. John Becker always likes to... Well, he said he wants to become the Gonzaga of the East.
Yeah.
That's something that he's said before. And it's funny because I think a couple weeks ago, Alex Abrami, who we'll be talking to later, did say that UVM has a higher RPI than Gonzaga. I don't know if that's still the case. I should probably check that. But I know that's at least amazing. A couple weeks ago, they had a higher RPI than Gonzaga.
655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join the conversation, 802-655-6672. Or you can text us down the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. With the news of Anthony Lamb potentially returning to UVM within maybe 2 weeks, all I can think of is Johnny Cash's song, I hear that train a-coming. It's coming around the bend. You know, that's like, because it's coming, boy. Let me tell you what, if this kid comes back and can play at the level that we expect Anthony Lamb to play, not to put any extra expectation on him because he's coming off a very tough injury, but if he comes back and he's anything like the Anthony Lamb that we had last year with the depth that this team has, look out. And I'm going to tell you something else. This team is a matchup nightmare for any team in the country. I mean, when you look at what their bigs can do in terms of taking you outside, you look at what their guards can do. I mean, look, you know, I mean, let's not go nuts here. You know, there are some great teams in the nation. But if the matchup is right for Vermont, that's a team that could play into the next weekend. I truly believe that.
And I think you're warranted in believing that. It's funny, with Anthony Lamb, you don't want to place expectations, but I'm there at almost every home game. And he's on the bench just... You know, they send a three up, and he goes, "Cash me!" And he's into the game, and he wants to get back out there. Every time I talk to him, he's like, "I just want to get back out there and play, man." And if he comes back, just the type of player he is, this team could really make a splash. If they could make a Sweet 16, Elite Eight run if they get a good draw.
I totally agree with you. I 100% agree with you. Just because they have the ability, they're very versatile and they're very deep. So obviously, good news if you're a Cats fan today. Anthony Lamb could be back in a couple weeks, but we'll talk to Alex about that at 11:20. So I want to go back to the Red Sox here for a second. You know, I've been a proponent of talking about when Dave Dombrowski came to Boston. You know, everybody was all fired up and excited, and obviously so. Dave Dombrowski's got a great track record. You know, you see what he's done in other organizations. You know, he's a winning guy. He's a win-first guy. You understand all that. But the first thing I said when he came was that, you know, Dave Dombrowski does not have the same mentality that the Red Sox have kind of preached about for the last, you know, when they were calling the Yankees the evil empire. You know, it's about the Red Sox, you know, their farm system, and they're going to develop their kids. And this is a different kind of animal with Dave Dombrowski. You know, Dave Dombrowski's job is to come in and try to win immediately. And I thought of you when I was having you on is, you know, so the funny story between Jack Cordy and I.
Let's get into this.
All right. So real quick, and the nutshell version of this is that my wife and I, Monica, went to Yankee Stadium last August to see the Tigers play. And we're having a great time. There's a rain delay. Mm-hmm. We go down to, you know, get a beer, you know, at one of the areas. And there's got to be, I mean, Yankee Stadium's got 50,000 people there. I would say 25,000 were at this beer garden, you know, because it was the only place where people were not getting wet. And all of a sudden, you know, I hear my wife talking to somebody and she goes, "Oh, he's right over here." And it was Jack Cordy talking to my wife because she had seen her ID that said she was from Vermont, correct?
Which sounds weird, okay?
I'm good with her ID.
But she was handing it over, and my dad and I don't get to see my dad very often. Yeah. We spent a weekend
there. And what a great guy, by the way.
He's awesome.
He's a very nice guy.
I can't say enough good words about him, but that's not for right now. So she was handing her ID because she got ID'd because...
Yeah, because I did not get ID'd. they asked me if I wanted a Social Security, like if I want a discount, you know, for being old. Monica's getting ID'd.
I did not witness that.
The lack of hair doesn't help.
Well, be quiet about my hair.
So she hands it over and I see it's Vermont. And I go, "Oh, you're from Vermont." And we got to talking. And then all of a sudden long story short, we find out that I work at NBC5 and you obviously do this show on the weekends. And, you know, coach the Colchester girls soccer team and blah, blah, blah. So we start talking. We spend the whole rain delay together.
Yeah, it was amazing.
And now we're here talking sports on Sports Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it's just funny how things happen. You know what I mean? Like, we're in a building that holds, well, first of all, we're 6 hours away from here. We probably cross paths 1,000 times with what we do on a daily basis. But great to meet you. I'm glad to have you on here. But you are a Tigers fan and a big Tigers fan.
That's why I was there.
Exactly. So Dave Dombrowski goes to Detroit. They have some really good years, don't win. But when he leaves, it's like he leaves them in ruins. You know, Detroit now is a rebuilding organization without a lot of prospects to get excited about.
It's like if you've ever seen that picture of a dumpster on fire.
Yeah, that was the New York Giants football this season. That's how I looked at my team this year. Yeah. So I know a lot about that dumpster fire you're talking about.
If you picture that, that's kind of what Dombrowski leaves behind in terms of the farm system. You know, he did a good job with the Tigers in trading away, you know, some of the top guys before he left just to get something back, because I think he cared about that organization enough. That's really where he made his name with Detroit.
But it was nice of him to do that. But it's like he's a win now guy, and that's what worries you if you're a Sox fan, I think. Everyone seemed to talk about John Farrell last year, that he was the problem. But to me, you know, Dombrowski's the one up there making these decisions, and now all of a sudden you're talking about the Red Sox needs, and that well is dry right now in that farm system. And that has Dave Dombrowski's name written all over it.
Yeah, because he depletes it. You know, that's what he does. Yeah, you bring him into a win now, which is a good thing. That's what the Red Sox want. They want to win now. They had a good enough team. You bring this guy in to make all the moves. And that's what, as a Tigers fan, the best years of my life were under Dombrowski, because right. He always went out. Every free agent was always linked to Detroit. It's like, you know, he went out and got David Price at the deadline. Yeah. He went out and always made a move. You could always guarantee a move. And that's what he's been doing with Boston, which is why I'm a little concerned that he hasn't signed JD. But they're probably just waiting. JD Martinez, probably just waiting to get.
Yeah,
him
not
in.
JD Drew. Not JD Drew. Right, right.
Is he still around? What is JD Drew doing?
Yeah, who knows?
But yeah, you bring him in to do that, and but he does leave behind no prospects, no anything. But that's fine, because as long as you get a championship. With Detroit, didn't get a championship,
and that's the thing. It's hard to win championships. So obviously, you know, with the Red Sox, it'll just be interesting to see what happens. But I just don't seem to hear anybody upset about Dave Dombrowski. And to me, this team's got Dave Dombrowski's name all over it. And when you get to a point now where you're thinking, now do we bid against ourselves for JD Martinez? Let me tell you right now, if the Red Sox are hitting the way they did last year and the Yankees have a huge lead or they're way out of it, I mean, there's going to be some moves that have to be made. I mean, you just wonder where this Red Sox organization goes from being the organization that everybody thought they wanted to be to one where you're thinking, uh-oh, if this doesn't go the right way, this could get really ugly in Boston. I don't know. Anyway, that's just my two cents on Dave Dombrowski. I take a quick break. Big day in the Paul household. We're going to talk about that, you know, because, you know, we talk about food on this show a lot. There's a big food day for me. We'll be right back. You know, Jack, I just got a text. We just got a text here. You know, it says, a friend of mine texts me. I know he's a buddy of mine. I won't call him out on the air, but I'm going to call him out at 11 o'clock. I'm going to go after him. Because typically, he goes, spoken like a truly biased sportscaster, New York sports fan, you know, just my comments. We're going to talk about that at 11 o'clock because I am a New York sports fan. I get it. I'm a Yankee fan, but I can tell you when I think something's great for the Red Sox. I'll be honest with you. I think Dave Dombrowski could be a problem in Boston if they don't win. Just the way I feel. You know what I mean?
I get it, but you bring him in to win, and he's going to give you a chance to win every year. Coming from a guy who had him.
I get it.
It's going to happen.
And we'll talk about that at 11 o'clock, and I'll explain what my point was. But hey, listen, you know, if he wants to think of some biased New York sports guy, fine. Fine, cuckoo. Fine. Maybe I am. And I'm happy with that. But in my house today is a chili competition at the Poor House. I don't think they're sponsors of ours, but who cares? I'm going to say it anyway. My wife, Monica, is going to enter her chili into the Poor House. She's won it. The first time she entered it 3 years ago, she won it. The second year, she finished second, so she's stressing out. She just texts me. She's like, I wish you could just try this before I bring it in there. I'm like, it'll be fine.
Wish you could bring it in here.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, you do, too. This is some good chili.
I could use some.
And this chili competition that she's in is out of this world. Like, there's like a zillion chilies. I mean, the fact that she's even placed in it is unbelievable. But, yeah, so it's nervous times in our house. And, obviously, her whole family's up. My Brady, happy birthday, Brady, 7 years old.
There
you go. Big day tonight. We got a big party tonight. Cake, you know, big cake and ice cream, you know, presents and all that stuff. Going to be a big night. So hopefully we're celebrating a birthday for Brady, and hopefully we're celebrating another chili win for my wife.
Yeah, well, so you guys were talking about this during the break.
Yeah.
And Jack mentioned that there's no better place to eat some chili than a hockey game.
Yeah.
And that raises the question for me. I was thinking about it. What about the other major sports? What's the best food for each major sporting
That's
event?
That's a good question.
I love this.
So I guess the question that comes out now that you're asking is, in terms of like being at the game or being like watching the game on television? You mean like being at a stadium or being at an arena, that type of thing?
Well, you could do either, but I was thinking being at the game.
Yeah.
All right, so you think chili at a hockey game is the best?
There's nothing better than, because you got the contrast of the chilliness in the arena with the warmth of the chili. You're sitting there, you know.
You got it on your shirt.
You got puck going you know around.
I mean? That would be me. That's the thing about chili and
you
me.
You got it on your shirt.
So I'd be, you know, you'd be out there, you'd be like at the game watching the game, and you eat it, and then you get done, you look down, and there's all kinds of red spots all over your shirt.
You got a bib.
Oh, the bit. Okay, yeah, or you put the napkin out. Oh, see, there you go. See, that's what I mean. That's why. That's good. That's
so
good.
Chili hockey game.
Okay, chili hockey game.
It's synonymous for me.
Yeah.
Baseball, you said hot dog.
Hot dogs everywhere. I'm hot dogs all over the place. Hot dogs at football games. Hot dogs at hockey games. Hot dogs at baseball games.
That's not fun, though.
But they're easy. It's not about being fun. It's about easy to eat. You can hold on and root at the same time.
Peanuts at a baseball game.
Peanuts. Really?
Yeah, because you can just throw them everywhere.
I like that. Usually you get thrown at me. That happens to me.
Does that happen to you?
Many times.
Peanuts thrown everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay, so football, though.
Okay, football.
You said hot dog. I don't think there is a food with football.
Well, I think there's...
Well, no. If you're up in the nosebleeds at a football game, I think it's got to be as many beers as you can
beers,
right?
Well, I think the beer piece is probably everywhere.
Yeah, I guess that is.
Let me tell you something about that. You've ever been to a football game in Buffalo?
No,
Let me tell you. I mean, the tailgating in Buffalo is the best tailgating I've ever been in my life. It's
like crazy.
The Bills Mafia is a real thing. So, I mean, when you talk about the best things to do, I mean, the food there is unbelievable. The people at a Bills game is unreal. And the things that you can do leading up to a Bills game is unbelievable. Like the things you can walk into the stadium with, it's like a crazy man's festival, you know, at these games. But I'll tell you, that's good tailgating at Buffalo games.
Things are on fire.
Yes.
Oh, at Buffalo games.
They go crazy. I saw a guy in a Bills jersey at a tailgating party jump onto a table and
break
it.
And that's mild stuff. And the other thing about that place is that it's in a neighborhood. So it's like, think about this. So basically, Rich Stadium, it's called Rich Stadium. No, it's not called Rich Stadium anymore. I think it's called something
else. New Era Field.
New Era Field. It's like you're driving down College Street and boom, there's a stadium. That's what it's like. You're in a
really?
Neighborhood. Oh, yeah. This isn't like, you know.
Orchard Park, right?
Yeah, Orchard Park. Yeah, you stop down Orchard Park. You got your Jiffy Mart right there. You got you know, Aunt Mary's house over there, Grandma's house there, and there's a field. That's what makes it so great. Anyway, all right, so I say hot dogs across the board. You guys are all over the place. You guys are like the connoisseurs of things. You're going to eat peanuts here, chili over there. You're going to eat this over here, nachos there, wings over there. I mean, I go to Yankee Stadium now. I'm eating sushi. What do you think of that?
That sounds like fun.
But the best thing I ever ate was at a PGA Tour event in Endicott, New York, at the old BC Open. They're called Speedies.
What is that?
It's like seasoned grilled chicken. It's like marinated grilled chicken in like a bun. A Speedy. That's the best thing I ever had at any kind of event. I ate a lot of those back in the day and a lot of Sun Chips, but I used to weigh like 240 pounds.
Sun Chips are great, though.
All right, we take a quick break. Actually, we're not taking a quick break. It's Sports Center time.
Sure.
I'm going to try not to butcher this one. You talked about dumpster fire.
He's phased.
My last Sports Center was a dumpster fire. It's like Dave Hunter doing it all over again.
All right, take your time.
Okay. Sports Saturday here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. My brother just texted me and said, what about sausage? I mean, you got to have the sausage at the games.
At a baseball game for sure.
Now, see, I eat I mean, I think every game has, like those, you know, the big peppers and onions, like the big things you get at the fair.
See, I'm not going to lie. I'm not a sausage guy.
Oh, okay. Well,
I mean, I am. But like, I mean, it's good, but yeah. I don't go to a game getting that. I mean, I can see, I always see it there.
Yeah.
But it's
yeah.
just not me.
That's just not you. You're more chili, peanuts.
Yeah.
You know.
A little beer.
Yeah.
Just a little one.
Just a teeny bit.
One. A sip.
Of course. Just to hold the cup because you get those cool cups that have the team logos on them.
Because I don't get to do that when I'm covering games.
Exactly.
Okay? I don't.
Why can you? I mean, the cameras you guys carry have got to be 240 pounds.
Well, on the lighter side.
I mean, they're big.
Yeah, 300 pounds.
I mean, that's just a lot of like technical stuff that's way over my head.
My right shoulder, it gets a nice workout.
Do you have your own cameras? Like you go and that's Jack's camera right there?
Yes, I do. Yes.
Do not touch his
camera. So it has all my settings and everything.
Right.
It's a camera from 1922.
You put stickers from all the cities you've been to all over it, like a
suitcase?
Oh,
yeah. It's bedazzled.
So like a gunpowder flash and like a thing for your head to go in. And
like this camera climbed Mount Washington? Like
bumper sticker on the back. Yeah. How'd you know?
I was just wondering. You know, I've always noticed that from afar. And I always, you know, and I've seen you at a couple of my games. I'm thinking, man, that is it's 2018. Can't we get a smaller camera for these guys?
You know, I'm still shooting in black and white on that too. We're getting new ones though. So shout out to, you know.
Oh,
I think we are.
Excellent. At least that's the rumor.
I broke news there.
Yeah, that's what they call a tease, right? Is that what you said? That's a tease?
Yeah. In the biz.
In the biz. That's right. Oh, my God. So, you know, my buddy Cuckoo, who thinks I'm some raging Yankees homer, he gets mad. He thinks I'm a raging Giants homer and a raging Yankees homer, which, you know, I'm a fan of both teams. But I wouldn't say I'm a homer. You know what I mean? But I just truly believe, like I told you, I just think that Dave Dombrowski needs to take more of a load on what's not happening in Boston. And it very well may happen in Boston this year if you think about what they have. You know, the bullpen, I think, is going to be a little bit of a struggle, but they have one of the best closers in baseball in Kimbrel. They have a rotation that can boast guys like Chris Sale and guys like Pomerantz, and if David Price comes back, that's a great rotation. I think the lineup on paper looks good, but I think you're asking a lot of Mookie Betts and Xander Bogaerts and Benintendi.
Yeah.
I think you're asking a lot of those guys, if you're asking them to put up power numbers like David Ortiz did or Manny Ramirez did. I think Hanley Ramirez is probably on the other side, so I don't think you're going to expect much out of that. So, you know, I think the team in general has a good look to it. I mean, I think mm-hmm. it's a team that you can be confident in if you're a Red Sox fan. I think it's something you should be confident in. And I truly still think that potentially on paper they should be ranked a little ahead of the Yankees.
Ah.
And I say that because, and I think the media has really overhyped the Yanks. I mean, I feel like, and again, this is going to come off probably poorly, but people love to hate the Yankees. Like, people love that when Larry Lucchino called the Yankees the evil empire back when they got A-Rod or when they got, and back then I can see that, you know, it was Giambi and A-Rod and Jeter and Posada and, you know, Gary Sheffield and Johnny Damon. I mean, they were all stars in every position.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Roger Clemens, David. I mean, they were loaded.
How many of those guys were on steroids, by the way?
Well, most of them. Well, see, but you can say the same about the Red Sox.
That's true.
I mean, you know, the Yankees take all the heat because A-Rod, you know, they went after A-Rod because, you know, I mean, baseball went after Alex Rodriguez. But listen, I'm not going to accuse anything here, but David Ortiz.
Oh, I know.
Okay, I mean, David Ortiz came to Boston in his late 20s. I think the most home runs he hit in Minnesota was 20. If you remember, they called that place the Homer Dome when he played there. He comes to Boston. You know, I think they got him for like a cup of tea and a sausage. Outside Fenway Park. Yeah, if you remember, he was like an afterthought. That signing was an afterthought, and he becomes Big Poppy. I'm not saying. I'm just saying. You know what I mean?
Fair enough.
So I'm saying, but it's an era thing. I don't think it's anything, you know, it's an era thing, and I think, you know, but I mean, yeah. And Manny Ramirez, I mean, the other thing about the Red Sox piece, and I'm not trying to change the steroid thing, talk away from the Yankees to the Red Sox, but do you remember Gabe Kapler?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, Gabe Kapler was an up-and-coming baseball player. He played a huge role in that first World Series win. Where'd he go the year after that? Japan. So you're looking at a guy that's looking at a big payday coming off a World Series championship, and he didn't say, I'm out of here. I'm going to go to Japan. So, you know, there might have been something in the coffee. Mm. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? I'm just
okay.
saying. But anyway, but I feel like the media looks at this Yankee team and said they want them to be the hated Yankees again. And I understand they trade for Mike Stanton or Giancarlo Stanton. Now they trade for Giancarlo Stanton. He's a you know, again, MVP from the National League, hits a lot of home runs. You pair him with Aaron Judge in that lineup, and you think, oh my God, could both of them together hit 100 home runs? But when you look at this team and what they're going to go to battle with, Jack, if the season started tomorrow, this team, think about this, would have Greg Bird, a homegrown kid, playing first, Gleyber Torres, a homegrown kid, playing second.
Who's very talented.
Amazingly talented. I mean, top one or two or three prospects in the game.
People want him.
Of course. And that's what, and the Yankees got him. You know, for you know, getting rid of Aroldis Chapman the first one, that's what got him to New York. But again, a kid, mm-hmm. Didi Gregorius, that is developed into what I think is one of the top rate shortstops in baseball.
Postseason hero.
Exactly. And then you're looking at a kid like Miguel Andujar, which is like the Yankees' sixth or seventh best. I think I shouldn't even be saying this on the air, but he's one of the top prospects. But again, a prospect playing third. Gary Sanchez behind the plate. Their number one pitcher is Severino. You know, again, a kid out of their system. And then you're looking at an outfield that's got, you know, Hicks in center field, which was a trade from Minnesota, which is, again, a guy that I think an afterthought. Judge, and we know who Judge is. And then, you know, whether they're going to DH Stanton or play Brett Gardner in left field, whatever it is, they're all kids. So, and then when you look at the bullpen, you know, yes, there's some names in the bullpen that they signed a couple years ago or a year ago. But again, the majority of the team are still young kids and still kind of unproven. You know, you're talking about guys like Jordan Montgomery in that rotation. You're talking about an almost 40-year-old CC Sabathia in that rotation. You're talking about a Tanaka that's still dealing with an elbow. I mean, that thing can go anytime. So you could be seeing players like Chance Adams showing up in New York sometime along the way. So my point being is, these are not the how can they still be the evil empire? And how can they even, and to me, I still think it's kind of a push to put this kind of expectation on the Yankees. I truly do. Mm-hmm. As a Yankee fan, I'm hoping that, hey, I hope this team rolls. I hope that they do everything that everybody's talking about. But when I look at teams like Houston, you talk about the evil empire. Now look at what Houston's got. They're loaded. And they're established guys. They're guys that are no, I mean, they bring in Gerrit Cole, and this is going to be a loaded team yeah. again. You know, you look at the Red Sox, and I just went down the names. Chris Sale, David Price, you know, Xander Bogaerts, Benintendi. Who's the right fielder? Mookie Betts.
Yep.
I mean, this is a great team. And so, you know, and the Yankees, to me, on paper, if you were asking me to make a prediction, I'm hoping they're going to win it. And I think they're going to be a good team. But I would say they're still a year away.
See, I think the reason the hype is so high right now is just because of that postseason run. You know, they gave the defending champs their best shot.
Sure.
And the Yankees aren't. Here's the thing, okay? As a guy who doesn't root for the Yankees.
Sure.
That team last season was the first time in a long time that I grew to enjoy watching a Yankees team.
Yep.
I don't think people think of them as the evil empire. I think that, and don't get offended by this.
Sure.
But I think that you, as a Yankees fan, are quick to jump to, oh, there's expectations. People think that we're all of a sudden the big bad boys again. People don't like us. People are quick to call us the evil empire. People are, you know, people hate us, you know, because we've won 27, 28.
Not yet, 27.
27, not yet.
Almost.
You hear this guy?
Well, I mean, it's got to, well, not yet. We got to win the next one.
Okay. But I think you're kind of quick to jump and say that people are calling them the evil empire again. This team's a fun team to watch.
But they are calling them that, though, Jack. I mean, if you read the blogs that I read every day, you know, again, I read a lot of these, you know, I got to do the show. I got to be up to date. You know what I mean? As my friend here keeps telling me, text, he's like, are you look through everything through New York tinted glasses? Mm. Whatever. I don't even wear glasses. But anyway, my point is that there are people out there that are saying, you know, this team is the juggernaut. I mean, I'll tell you, the best TV show to me, the best sports TV show on television is on the Major League Network, Major League Baseball channel.
Mm-hmm.
It's Chris Russo's show.
Yeah.
If you ever get a chance to watch that show, it's the best baseball show on television. You know, and he's out there, and again, I know he hates the Yankees, so I know he's out there just trying to put that big mark on their back. But, you know, there are people out there that look at this team and say that they're back. This team, if this team doesn't make, I mean, listen, who's the afternoon guy on the show before Brady's show and the boys' show?
Levitard?
No, Stephen A. Smith.
Oh,
Stephen A. Smith came out and said they better make the World Championship. They need to be in the World. They better be in the World Series. It's like, whoa, hold on, Stephen A. I mean, I understand the names are big, but look, you know, Judge is coming off shoulder surgery, and you never know. I mean, there's always potentially sophomore slumps. You don't expect it with Judge because you look at his game and you look at his demeanor and you think he's going to be a superstar. I mean, Greg Bird has not been able to stay healthy at all, so you don't know what he's going to bring to the table. Second and third, we don't even know who's playing there right now. You know, you figure Didi's going to be strong, and you know, you just don't know. I mean, how's Stanton going to deal with New York City? I mean, there's a lot of strikeouts between Stanton and Judge as well in there. So you feel like Sanchez, you know, he struggled last year behind the plate. So I think the expectation is great, and I think that they're an up and coming team, and I think they're a team that could be a juggernaut soon. And when some of this money comes off the books, say in a year or two, and you see the names like Manny Machado running around there and Bryce Harper, there's some names out there. You wonder if that's when the Yankees would be, okay, we're going to open the book again and get these guys in. But, you know, I don't know if right now is the time that you say this team is back and they're the favorites when you have teams like Houston and teams like Boston, you know, that look like, to me, they're more seasoned than, say,
Cleveland.
The Yankees are. Cleveland, no one's talking about Cleveland either.
No,
another
and they
example.
Had a disappointing postseason run. I think the difference with the Yankees this year, okay?
Yeah.
Last season, zero expectations.
Right.
Young. Baby bombers.
Oh, yeah.
Exceeded every expectation that was set for them.
Yep.
Judge becomes this superstar, this otherworldly player.
Yeah.
He's got thighs for arms.
He does.
They add another guy, thighs for arms.
Yeah, he's a big guy. Two big guys
back to back. So no expectations last year. They push the World Series champs to game seven. Almost take them down. This year, you expect at least that. They add a guy like Stanton. That's why the expectations are so high.
I get it.
That's why people are pushing the Yankees past the Red Sox. The Red Sox are on the complete opposite. All the expectations in the world last year, disappointed. Tough postseason exit. This year, they have no expectations, at least not as high, because of what the Yankees did. Everyone only remembers what happened last, okay? The Yankees, obviously, we know what they did in the postseason.
Right.
We know what the Red Sox did. Everyone's memory is short.
655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join the conversation. 802-655-6672. Are the Yankees or the Sox? Who's a favorite in the American League East? And I would say on paper, I mean, it's the Red Sox. I really would. I just want to, when you look at the body of work of the players that are coming back, and I think there's concern with Boston because I think they missed that bat in the middle that scares you, that you missed the power because they didn't hit very many home runs last year. And we didn't even mention the third baseman. I mean, who's a rookie they brought
Devers.
Up? Devers. I mean, you know, that kid.
He's a stud.
He is. And look what he did, you know, when he came up. So you figure another year with him, he's going to be a great player. So, you know, on paper, I feel like the Red Sox, just because their rotation looks like it's, if all these guys stay healthy, you know, they said Chris Sale did some different things in the offseason so he doesn't wear down late in the season. I mean, you got an ace in Chris Sale that you know is going to be, especially early in the season, Chris Sale's going to dominate people. That's just what he does. You know, so you I mean, I don't know. I just feel like it's unfair to put that kind of expectation on a team
I shouldn't say unfair because I think it's warranted. You're the Yankees and what you did last year. And I understand what you're saying. But when you look at the team in general, yes, there's talent. And they could win a World Series. That team could win 115 games with that team they have on their roster.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of unknowns there, and it's going to be with a lot of kids. I guess when you look at the Yankees in the past, you thought about a lot of guys brought in, a lot of older guys. This team is full of kids. I mean, Stanton is still a young man. Judge is a baby. You know, Hicks is a baby. I mean, you know, Gleyber Torres, who knows? I mean, and if Gleyber Torres doesn't get it done, they're going to put a guy like Danny Espinosa out there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I just, when you look at this team, to me, I feel like there's a lot of expectation, a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to the season. But I'm pumping the brakes on whether this team is a World Series contender yet just to see how it all plays out. Because now, for the first time, in the pressure piece, like Aaron Judge is going to have to carry that load of, I'm the face of baseball. I mean, they're trying to make him the face of baseball. And he should be, because he's a great guy. I mean, I've never seen...
I love rooting for him.
How can you not? I mean, he's just a good kid. I mean, you know, everything he says is right. He reminds me of Derek Jeter. He really does remind me of Derek Jeter, especially, you know, just the way he handles the media and how mm-hmm. calm he is. And, it'll be interesting to see.
We were talking about when I was out at Yankee Stadium and we saw you, and my dad and I made it a point to sit in right field.
Yep.
We wanted to sit in right field for at least one game just to see Judge in action. I think he robbed a homer that game or something. I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking
it was
of,
an ugly game.
It was
an
ugly
game.
At least
from my perspective, it was.
Yeah, they only scored in the first inning.
Yeah, Detroit scored like three runs in the
and
first.
That was it.
And how about that storm that came through there at the end? Were you there for that big
yes,
storm?
Yes, it was insane. It was pouring buckets down there. But we made it a point to sit out in right field to watch Judge. And, you know, my dad was the one who did that. And he's very skeptical of the young guys sometimes.
Sure, sure.
He likes to, we'll see. Let's see them do it for a couple years. But he was like, I love this Judge cat. I love this Judge character. I want to sit out there. I want to watch him. He's a special guy.
Yeah.
And all I know is in the AL East this year, it's a two-horse race.
It is.
It's going to be fun. And it's all, as a Tigers fan, it kind of stinks to say it, but baseball's better when the Yankees are good and the Red Sox are good and they're going at it and they're sword fighting and it's just a good time.
It is. And the rivalry is awesome. I mean, anyone that says they don't like the rivalry, it's great. It'll be interesting to see now. You got two young managers in Boone and Cora. You know, you got a bunch of young players and it's fun to see those little rivalries. We'll see how it buds. And truth, as a Yankee fan, I hope they let the kids play. I really do. Even if that costs them winning a division or even going to the playoffs, I hope those kids get to be able to go out and play and see what you got, because they've got a lot of young talent, and I'd like to see that young talent lead them to their next dynasty.
It's baseball season, man.
It is. I'm loving it. And it's 85 degrees down in Florida right now, according to Jen McCaffrey that we just talked to.
It is not 85 here.
Not even close to 85 here.
8.5.
It's not even, it's closer to 8.5 than 85.
Yeah, here.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to the Burlington Free Press's Alex Abrami, our UVM men's basketball insider. Anthony Lamb cleared to play. The Cats could lock up the America East tomorrow. There's a lot to talk about here, because now I think you're playing for seeding, so you got to keep winning.
Yeah.
All right, we'll talk to Alex next. Good morning. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. It's me, Jeff, and Jack from NBC5. It's new for me to use that term, by the way, NBC5.
It's new for all of us.
I like it, though.
It flows.
It does. It's much easier to say than the other thing.
What's the other thing?
W something something something. WPTZ. Plattsburgh, North Pole, Burlington. Right? That's hard to say.
Yeah.
And I know that well, because when I was a kid growing up, I'd be home from sick, be homesick from school. My grandparents would be watching the Wheel of Fortune or something. And be like, you're watching WPTZ.
Yep.
Plattsburgh, North Pole, Burlington.
North Pole?
North Pole. Santa
they said
Claus.
That?
They said it.
It's before my time.
Way before.
Yeah.
You weren't even born.
I was negative two.
Yeah, you were negative. That's the temperature outside. All right, let's talk some UVM hoops. We had talked earlier. We talked about the news that Anthony Lamb is going to be cleared to play within the next 2 weeks.
Very shortly.
This UVM team is on the cusp of another America East championship, a team that's got real potential here to do something special in this tournament if they can get to that. And who better to talk to than our good friend from the Free Press on the TikTok Jewish guest line, Alex Abrami, joins us to talk some UVM hoops. Good morning, Alex.
Hi, good morning, guys.
How's it going today?
I'm great, but I wasn't aware that Jack would be on. I would have changed my plans.
I wanted to surprise you. I wanted to surprise you. See, I asked him about these little rivalries between all you guys, and he said, "No, we're all great friends." Everyone gets along just super.
Except Alex and I.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are the ones. We don't get along. So when I heard he was coming on, I was like, oh, I almost changed my plans.
You were a little. Yeah, he did get a little white in the face when I said, oh, but we have Alex coming on at 11:20. He got a little nervous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can have a little, you know, we can have like a little back and forth here, and you guys can be buddies when this is over again.
Well, if there's one person who knows more about UVM men's basketball than me, it's Alex.
It's Alex. Alex, let's get in.
Oh, that's high praise.
You're welcome.
Here, isn't that nice?
That's where it ends.
All right, Alex, listen, Anthony Lamb gets cleared to play in 2 weeks. What does that mean for this team?
It could mean a big boost. I don't know. It's still kind of like undecided. There's no really technically no timetable set in terms of him, like when he would return to the court to play. Like right now, he's like his foot is healed, as you guys probably talked about earlier.
Yep.
And now he's going to start the process of getting back to play. And so, like, you know, he's got to go through. You can see how his foot responds to walking, to running, and then to practicing and stuff like that before they make a decision on when he gets back into a game, if at all. I think he's hopeful he wants to play, and I think the team wants him back, but they certainly don't want to rush it and then have him re-injure his foot or anything like that, especially when, I mean, we're obviously getting close to the end of the season now, and, you know, fans and the team and Lamb, you know, they all want him back in there, but let's not rush it. Let's see how his foot responds to some light workout, some light activity on the side before they get him back into practice.
Alex,
he clearly has to practice first before he gets into any game action.
I mean, that injury's tough because, you know, you kind of lose your wind, you lose your court, you know, fitness. I mean, is there some concern there about Anthony's fitness going into this? I mean, because obviously we're talking about it is the end of the season. You know, the tournament's going to be here in less than a month. I mean, do they think if he is healthy enough that they can get him, you know, back to mid-game shape to be able to be the factor that we know he can be?
I would think so. I mean, I think Anthony, you know, I don't think they're concerned about his conditioning. You know, he's been doing some light stuff. I noticed the other day he was, you know, he was on the treadmill. Not to say that's everything, but he's been gung-ho. He's been driven through the recovery process. Sure, it's going to take some time to get reacclimated once he returns, but I don't think they're concerned about that. I think they're more concerned about him responding the right way coming off the healed foot. And once they feel good about that, once Anthony feels good about that, they can get him back into the rotation.
Alex, are you at all worried about the chemistry when he comes back? Because I think about how well this team's been playing, and yes, it was a lot of second stringers on Thursday that we saw out there, a lot of bench players, but just worried about integrating him back into this rotation and seeing how well they've been doing without him?
Yeah, no, that's a fair question. I kind of thought about that like a couple weeks ago when they started this, or in the middle of this tear that they're on now with 15 in a row. And Anthony's such a big presence. Like, they do a lot of, like, obviously he's, you know, you could say he's the best player in the league. He was the preseason player of the year. He was having a great season before he got hurt. But what's unusual about Anthony is, at least for UVM's program, they don't run a whole lot of stuff just for individual guys. It's more of a system. It's more of a balanced attack. But with Anthony, they're actually running stuff for Anthony. So if he comes back, does that kind of, like you said, kind of like mess up the chemistry a little bit, or kind of, you know, because they've been going on such a great ride without him? But I think at any point when you can get a player of his caliber back, you welcome him with open arms and you find a way to do it. And I think because this team is, as we've seen over the last couple of years, they're so team first. Like they don't really care about stats. They, you know, they want to win. They saw what it was like. They experienced that last year, that winning feeling. They want to do it again. So I think they would easily let Anthony come back into the fold and see how it plays out. If he does come back.
Alex, you know, this team, you know, it looks like they're going to lock, if they get a win tomorrow, which there's no reason to believe that they're not, if they beat Hartford at home tomorrow, they're going to lock this thing up. And over in years past, and Jack and I were talking about this earlier, you know, you just did what you need to do. You need to be the number one seed going into your conference tournament. You're going to play all your games at home. But for me, this team needs to keep winning. Because, I mean, I truly believe they're a matchup nightmare for some of the major programs in the country. And truthfully, I mean, I feel like they potentially could be a second weekend team, you know, if their matchup is right. So winning's got to be really important, even if they wrap this thing up tomorrow, right?
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to – obviously, they play to win every game like every team, and I think, you know, they don't want to lose that edge. They want to keep winning. They want to stay on that role. And then, you know, they won't talk about it. But, yeah, it's you want to get that, you know, potential 12 seed. If you lose a game or two after you lock up the conference before you even get to the American East final, if you get that far, you would lose that, like, that 12-13 seed, that's still in play, just like last year. They're on the same pace. They're on the exact same pace they were last year at this point. You know, if they win out, they're going to be 29-5 with a 22-game winning streak instead of a 21 because I think they had that Dartmouth win from earlier this year in there after they already had started league. So they're pretty much on the same exact run that they were last year at this time, which is pretty incredible. And if they keep that up, from what we see, I think Joe Lunardi had them as a 12 seed, I think, in the latest projection. So that's right in that range if they stay winning, which they have to stay winning if they want to get that 12 seed. I think that would be all the motivation in the world for them to keep on rolling.
And you wonder where they'd be if they just held on to a couple of those non-conference games they had early. You know, the St. Bonaventure. I mean, I'm trying to think. St. Bonnie snipped them. I think Bucknell nipped them.
Yep.
You know, if you get those two wins, I mean, and they were to run the table. I mean, think about where they'd be, where they potentially could be going into this tournament from Vermont.
A 12 seed would be.
You could always play that game, but then you can look at the Bahamas tournament. Then they rallied from like, what was it, 10 or 12 down late in the game.
Why do you got to be the downer on this, Alex? Come on now, let's play this game.
He's the worst.
Trying to be objective.
Jeez.
Well, I'm just trying to point out that, you know, they've won
in
a row. It's hard to do it. And then if you look at some of the games that they won in November, like, they could have lost those games.
Right.
So, but yeah, you can, because you look at the St. Bonnie's game, clearly, because they lost at the buzzer after they had taken the lead off of Henson's putback, and then lose it on that transition three at the buzzer. Like, that's a heartbreaker. That's their last loss, and that probably really sticks it. That's the one, like, if they win that game, that's a quality win on the road or neutral site, but against an A-10 team that just beat Rhode Island last night. So, like that would have been a major boost in their RPI and then in potential seeding, but it ends up as a loss, and you can still be on pace really for that 12 seed. You know, we can hope.
The thing that's different about this team this year is they haven't gotten blown out. I think their largest loss
is it Marquette. And Marquette had to shoot. What did Marquette make, like 35 threes?
Yeah,
in that
they were
game?
Incredible.
It was insane.
So I think that's the difference. Last year they lost to Providence by more than 20.
Yep.
They lost to South Carolina, Final Four team, but they lost. They got blown out. This year they haven't gotten blown out, and they've also been in tight contests. Alex, the thing I want to ask you is, my sense with this team is the thing that's going to keep them going is the streak. They don't want to talk about it. They won't talk about it. They barely talk about it. That's what they say to us. The thing that keeps them going and keeps them driving is this streak. It's easy to get complacent if they didn't have it. They want to keep making history. Do you get that sense that that's why they keep, you know, they could achieve this 12 seed? They could make a run. It's because they want this streak to continue.
Yeah, I think that plays into it. Maybe not. I do believe that they don't really talk about it, because once you start talking about how great you are, then you're going to fall into complacency and, you know, and stuff like that. But I think they know, they know how close they were last year against Purdue as the 13th seed going in with 21 in a row. They know that they can get, if they get the right matchup in that 12 to 13 seed range, that they could pull off a win or two. And I think that's what I think is really, like, I think the streak goes hand in hand with this, but they really want to win a game or two in the tournament. So I think that's what's driving them. They want to get back to March Madness and win, instead of, you know, be one and done. But to get in a matchup that's favorable to them, they do have to keep on winning, because they're coming from one of the worst conferences as a whole in the country.
I'll tell you this, though. The pressure these kids are going to feel when this America East tournament starts is going to be insane. I mean, it's going to be crazy. And I'll tell you, that Albany team scares me. I don't know what it is about that Albany team. And again, Vermont finds ways to win. I mean, that game they had down there a week ago was one of the guttiest performances I've seen a UVM team have in years, coming back and winning that basketball game, especially with the emotion that was happening in that building, especially with Albany. I mean, talk about that. I mean, what will Becker, this is probably a stupid question, but I mean, what does Becker do to make these kids, you know, not feel that pressure? Because I'll tell you what, that America East, I was courtside for that America East championship last year, and you could tell those kids were tight.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think there's anything you can say to not feel the pressure, not feel the nerves a little bit. I mean,
we could ask Mike Ruzioni.
You're going to get. What's that?
We had Mike Ruzioni early. Maybe he could get, he'd come in and do the pep talk that Herb Brooks gave them before they took on the USSR.
Yeah, I think if they know what their prize is, and yep. if it's Albany, if it's UMBC, if it's New Hampshire, Hartford, whoever, come tournament time, they're gonna want. I think they're really focused and they're driven. They know what they want to do. It's just if they go out and execute with or without Lamb, they're still they've shown that they're the best team in the league by far. I mean 1 through 13 really when you look at it, like it's as we saw the other night, it's next guy up, but it's more than just next guy up. I mean these guys are producing. You know, Cam Ward was the sixth man of the year in the conference 2 years ago, then takes a step back last year, and now as a senior he's kind of rising to that senior moment. And it's not just him, you know, it's Steph Smith had a good game the other day. Rob Petey had some nice moves inside, had some good buckets and a couple of nice rebounds. And then Benny Shungu had shown a little bit of flair, shown a little bit of what he did at Rice in terms of driving to the hoop and stuff like that. So like they have really talented guys on the roster, and you know they're showing it now as you get deep into league play. And I think that's what's going to pay off once you get to the conference tournament. Yeah, the bench might shorten, but there's really no letdown with this team, and that's why they're pretty much one step above everyone else in the conference.
Alex, I want to thank you for the insight and putting your differences aside with Jack here and coming on the show today. It's very nice.
Maybe Jack can grow a beard by next week.
Hey, Alex, don't stress yourself too much today, okay? Like, just have a good Saturday, all right? I know Alex is just always working hard.
He's the best.
Yeah.
I'm telling you,
he actually lives at Patrick Gymnasium. Did you know that?
I thought he lived down at. I thought he lived at the office. That's what we're. That's
well. That he has an office at Patrick Gymnasium.
Well, of course he does.
Yeah. So,
I'm glad I got in the middle of this. Good to talk to you, Alex. Have a great weekend, buddy.
See you soon, man.
All right. See you soon, guys.
Interesting conversation about UVM. I mean, I'm telling you right now, I've said it 1,000 times, like get your butt to Patrick Gymnasium and follow this team because you just don't know. I mean, this doesn't happen to schools like UVM all the time, and we're in the middle of something very special. But I will tell you this, that the bummer part about a team like UVM is they got to win their conference tournament. If they don't, I don't want to say it's all for naught because the season is more about winning a championship or going to that tournament, but I'll tell you right now, what a disappointment it would be if they didn't. So get out there and root for your Cats when this tournament starts.
They would say it's all for naught.
I agree, and I think that would be fair. All right, take a quick break. When we come back, we haven't even talked about the Olympics.
True.
You know, we got to talk a little bit about that. Maybe we can touch a little more UVM. We got a lot to talk about, even though the show's almost over.
I know, flown by. Olympics talk is fun, though.
Let's do it. Of course, we'll be right back. You know, when Bernie's here, I'm always, you know, because he's a big, I mean, I don't know if or not, he's a big Duke fan, basketball fan. I'm a big Virginia basketball fan, and my Virginia Cavaliers are number one team in the nation.
Yeah.
I mean, how awesome. And Brian Bernie's not here for me to rub it in. You know, I did a lot of texting and calling during when it came out on Monday that they were the number one team in the country, but nice.
Can I tell you something?
Sure.
My dad went to Michigan State.
Oh.
I grew up a Michigan State fan.
Oh. My brother-in-law went to Michigan State. He's a big Michigan State. He's in town, too.
Go Sparty.
Yeah. Okay, whatever.
Number two.
They are annoying.
Should be number one.
They should not be number one.
You guys just lost.
Big deal. Big deal. We just won. We just went down to Miami.
UVA
and won.
Is fantastic. They're number one in the seedings that were released, right?
Yeah, they're the number one team in the country, and and right now at the tournament start, they'd be the number one overall seed, if you can believe it. This is a team that was picked to finish sixth in the ACC and wasn't even ranked in the preseason.
You don't want to see us in the tourney, though.
Of course not.
Michigan State.
That's what I mean. I want Michigan State to keep winning so they're a one seed somewhere else.
Because we always beat you.
They always beat
they,
Virginia.
I guess they, I should say. They, not this, we.
It makes me angry.
Not a part of the team.
I think it's still cool. I still say we when it comes to my teams. Like, you know, we, that's, you know, I'm in it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm vested, okay? Like, I want to be, like, I think it's fair to say, like, if you're a big fan,
yeah,
it's okay to say we. When it's not okay, there's a point in life where I don't think it's okay to walk around town with the same team shirt and the same team hat or something like that. You know what I mean?
That's too much.
Unless you're at a game. So, for example, I have the Virginia hat today.
Okay.
But I couldn't be wearing the UVA sweatshirt or something with it. Too much. You know what I mean? If I had a Yankee shirt on, I can't wear the Yankee hat. I think when you're like, there's got to be a point where you got to stop that. You know what I mean?
My buddy Jack Fitzsimmons from Channel 3,
yeah.
He was out. We were out last night having a drink.
You just said he's a big Wahoo fan, right?
Yeah, big Wahoo fan.
Yeah,
and he came in wearing, which is hilarious that you say that, a Virginia hat and a Virginia long sleeve tee.
You can't do that.
Tied.
Yeah.
Tied together. Not tied together, yeah. But, you know, at the same time,
I
mean, at the bar.
I'm out. Yeah. So I'm like, I'm all about the, I'm wear your colors. But there's a point in life where I think it's like when you hit the, like 20 or 21 years old, you got to stop.
Can you wear a jersey, though? Are you a, you can wear a jersey with someone else's name on the back?
Sure. I'm okay with that. And I'm
a lot of people don't like that.
And I'm also okay with you doing that if you go, you know, if you go to a game. Now, let's say you go to an event. Then you can wear the hat, the shorts, the pants, whatever you want. You want to mix it all together. That's fine. But you can't be wearing, you know, the top body. You just can't do that.
Looking like you're on the staff.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
The team. Yeah, I'd
love
assistant.
To be. I mean, you'd love to be, but you can't do that. But anyway, Virginia, number one team in the country. How cool is that? I mean, who thought that would have happened?
Sparty's coming for you.
Be quiet about your Sparty. Somebody else might be coming for Sparty.
Who?
The FBI. Okay? So you better stop worrying about the Cavaliers. Stop worrying about the FBI might be coming for Sparty.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
That's another topic for another time.
Yeah.
Hey, the Olympics have started. Exciting. Are you into the Olympics? You are into the Olympics.
I have to be, to be fair. Right. They're on our network.
Yep.
It's on NBC, obviously, in case you
NBC
haven't.
5.
NBC 5.
Yep. Plattsburgh, North Pole, Burlington. NBC 5.
They're on our network, so, you know, you've seen them. If you turn on the TV, you've seen them everywhere.
Yep.
And I am thoroughly impressed with just the amount of talent that comes out of this area.
It is, and that's why the Winter Olympics are so cool. I think the only problem that I've had with the Olympics is I don't know what's live and what's not.
That's tough.
You know, it's like I'm watching this, but I stayed up to like 2 in the morning watching the U.S. women's hockey team take on the Canadian team.
Amanda Pelkey.
That was some game, by the way.
It was.
Did you watch that game?
I watched the entire thing.
The last like few seconds, the puck came across, and she just whiffed it. I'm like, oh, my God. And then the shot hit the crossbar, went over the goalkeeper. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Pelkey almost scored.
Yeah.
UVM alum, Montpelier
She's
native.
She's unbelievable.
She's pretty much the pride of Vermont.
She
in
is.
The Olympics.
Well, next to Bernie.
Next to Bernie.
Yeah, I mean, next to Bernie Siplicki.
She almost scored.
I didn't mean Bernie Sanders. I meant Bernie Siplicki. That's what I'm talking about.
He's
the pride of Vermont sports around here, buddy. Let me just tell you.
Of
my
course.
Boy, Bernie Siplicki.
Love Bernie. Saw him at the UVM game Thursday.
Yeah.
He said to let you talk.
Oh, yeah, okay. he knows that's no problem for me because I usually don't let him talk. Anyway, it's been exciting, and there is so many. I wanted to bring this up because you had a great you went to Burke Mountain.
I did a couple weeks ago.
And talk about so Shiffrin trained there.
She's remarkable. So she's already considered the best skier of all time.
Yes,
which is insane.
And what is she?
22.
22 years old.
She's 22 years old. She's already considered the best. She attended Burke Mountain Academy for I believe middle school.
Yeah,
and then came back for high school.
Yeah,
and went there and graduated from Burke Mountain Academy, which is, if you don't know what it is, let me just set the stage here for a second. These kids, high school students, they wake up, they get breakfast, and they hit the mountain.
Yep.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 5 days a week, they're doing runs. This is what they've set out to make their life about. And my biggest question to these students was, you know, what are your goals here? Like, how do you come to the choice of making skiing your life, because that's what they teach out there. And they go, you know, we're just trying to, we want to go ski competitively in college. We want to make a U.S. team, stuff like that. And Shiffrin, from what I gathered while I was out there, was just an exceptional talent. They knew from the very beginning that she was an exceptional talent. And her coaches were like, you know, she'd be out there and get the first runs of the day. She'd go out there before everyone else and just run after run after run. And over time, she got 1,000 more runs down the hill or the mountain as opposed to her fellow classmates. And that's how you knew that she had that talent. Now you're seeing it on the world stage at the Olympics. We saw it 4 years ago in Sochi. We saw her get a gold medal on Wednesday night in the giant slalom.
Which is not even her best event.
No. The best event is the slalom, which unfortunately was disappointing, a fourth place finish because she slipped up a little bit.
But it's so hard to get that. I was watching, what was the GS last night? Was the giant slalom last night?
Super G.
The Super G was last night. Okay.
Yeah, that's even bigger than the giant.
Yeah. I mean, and first of all, you can lose this by like a point, half a second or whatever. And that's a lot. I mean, that's getting blown out. These girls are going 65, 70, 55 miles an hour down the mountain. It's amazing to watch. But not only that, I mean, all of these sports, like the skeleton. Like, how do you get involved in wanting to do that as a kid? Like, I mean, who said to get somebody, you know, I'm going to be a great skeleton racer? I mean, you're going to go down this, track 100 miles an hour. You're not really going to control it much. You're just going to wear a helmet and see where we go. You know what I mean? I mean, these sports are amazing. And you know, you put them on, and I think the first thought process I have, Jack, is like, you know, whatever. Then you watch, and you're like, oh, my God, this is amazing.
No, they're remarkable.
They are.
And I get the whole not into it thing. The time change does make that difficult. They're 14 hours ahead.
Yep.
So primetime is their morning, which is somehow NBC gets all the good events in primetime.
Yeah.
So money talks.
Exactly.
Money talks. But, you know, you tune in and even if you don't like watching someone ski right. or curl.
It's amazing. Curling. The curling piece is like, I'd love to get in a curling league.
Curling is always on.
My buddy Moses is in a curling league in Boston.
And exist?
Yeah. I mean, it's a big curling league in Boston. And I don't know if he's still in it now, but last year he was in it. And he loved it. He goes, yeah, we play every Thursday. We go curling.
Yeah, I don't get how people wake up and they're like, you know what I really want to go do? I just got to be a curler.
Yeah.
But all the more power to them, yeah. Especially if you're competing at the Olympics.
That's amazing. I mean, what a fun sport to go to the Olympics and be like, I'm on the curling team. I would love that. That would be, you know.
If you could pick a sport to do, what would you be an Olympic athlete?
Olympics?
Yeah,
I
in the winter.
Choose one.
Let's start
okay.
Winter Olympics.
I mean, I think the most amazing is the long jump where they ski down and they...
Flying squirrel.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, how do you start that? Like, what's your first thing you do when you're going to do that? That's, you know what I mean? Like you decide, this is really what I want to do. How do you start training for that?
1 foot at a time. Like, yeah. you jump in 1 foot and then 5 feet and then all of a sudden you're going 100.
That's insane.
Meters.
Or whatever it is. I don't know anything. I just know that's... But I think if I could do any sport in the Olympics... I think the curling piece would be good because it's fairly low impact, and I probably wouldn't get hurt. I don't think. Maybe get your fingers crushed between the stones or something. I don't know about that, but I don't know. But but like I said, I'm not a huge winter sports fan. I wouldn't, you know, when I'm flicking through TV normal, if I saw a ski event, I wouldn't necessarily stop and watch. Mm-hmm. But I've been watching them at night, and it's unbelievable, especially when you see the slow motion, how fast they're going in these milliseconds, and the decisions that they have to make, and not only that, you know. The different, like, the, for example, the flags they have to go through, like, to know which one they have to get through that quickly and to make that decision. And, you know, and that thought process is in your head when with a matter of seconds, your life's going to change, essentially. You know, you think about when you're in a race last night, the GS last night, you know, those kids are up there, those girls are up there, and it's like, okay, we have seconds here, we're going to go. And when I get to the bottom of this thing in like 35 seconds, my life could change. That's pretty amazing.
You're a gold medalist.
That's amazing. I can't imagine having a gold medal put around my neck with my country on my back. I can't imagine it.
You got the American flag draped over you.
Oh, yeah. I think the emotion would take over. I just, all that training and all that work for that moment. That's what makes these athletes so special is that they're not on TV all the time. They're not the ones that are prodded out there like NBA, Major League Baseball, NFL players. These are people, I mean, these are kids that have worked their whole lives for one moment. And they get an opportunity to do it. That's what makes the Olympics so special.
And if you want to check something out, yeah, that Schifrin piece I did, it's online.
It is.
MyNBC5.com.
And it's very good. No, it's okay. You should plug because it's very well done. You're a very, very talented newsman.
Well, thank you,
I'm just
sir.
Telling you right now.
Thank you very much.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to tie a bow on this show. Jack, see how fast this goes by, man?
It's 2 hours fast. Done.
Too fast. All right, we'll be right back. So full day for you today. Full day for you to do the radio show.
Yep.
Then you're head up to do some UVM women's lacrosse.
They start their season in 4 minutes.
Oh my goodness, that's crazy.
Outside.
It's going to be chilly out there for those girls.
But not negatives.
No, of course.
That's what you hope for.
I mean, what is the temperature? Let me tell you what the temperature is out there right now. Let me give you a little something. Let me give you something live here. It's 24 degrees.
Is it really 24?
Yeah, it's fine.
I need more layers.
No, it's no problem. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
You're fine. You're a Midwest guy. You can't handle 24 degrees.
No, I'm fine. But Virtue Field is like, there's 40-mile-an-hour winds always.
It is cold.
It's calmer everywhere else in the state, but 40-mile-an-hour winds at Virtue.
So you're going to go from Virtue Field, then you're going to go down to Norwich.
Norwich has a playoff hockey doubleheader. If you're down in the Northfield, Vermont area, head on down. Women play at 3. Men play at 7 against in-state rival Castleton.
My alma mater.
Did you go to Castleton?
I graduated from class of 98, baby.
So you are a Spartan fan.
That Spartan fan. I'm not a Spartan fan of your Spartan fan. I'm just telling you that.
Fair enough.
Hey, man, thanks for doing this today. This was a lot of fun. I met you last year,
yep.
And I always wanted to do a show with you. And so when Bernie was like, you know what, I can't do this show, I'm like, you know, I'm going to ask see if Jack wants to do it. This is great.
I loved getting
a lot
that
of fun.
Call.
We'll do it again. We'll definitely do it again because Bernie's has to go on sabbatical all the time.
He's a busy man.
He is. Bernie wears a lot of hats.
He does.
He does. He has a lot of things.
I see him big. He's always big ESPN3 guy now.
He gets to hold the microphone. That's got the. I tell him that's the coolest thing.
That's remarkable.
Isn't that cool? See, that's the thing I want to do. Like, I want to be able to do a thing and hold the microphone that's got ESPN across it or whatever it is, CBS, whatever it is, one major network. I want to be held. I want to have a picture of me talking, holding that microphone.
You got to shave your face if you go on ESPN.
I know. I got to trim this up anyway because I'm going on vacation.
I
I'm going on sabbatical.
So are you going clean shaven then for Florida?
I'm
going
to buzz it down a little bit. I'm gonna go much lower than this. But this is warm, you know, this little beard I have going. I never grew beards at all for a long time. And then, like, about a year or 2 years ago, I let one go. My team was undefeated.
Yeah.
And I'm very superstitious. We've talked about that with my teams. And my soccer team was undefeated. And I never shaved for a whole season. And I got a beard. I'm like, oh, this is bad.
If they let me have a beard, because they don't.
Like, oh, yeah. According to Alex, he doesn't think you can grow one.
Even know I can grow a better beard than a Brahmi.
I don't know, man. That guy, I think that guy's got the beard gene.
No Shave November.
Did you not shave in November?
No, I wish I could.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to go on air with a beard.
Oh,
that's
really?
What I was taught in college.
Oh, maybe that's true.
Until you become a well-known person in the area. And because apparently beards, is what they taught me in journalism school.
Yeah.
They say that people with beards aren't trustworthy.
Oh, my God. Give me a break.
So I don't trust you.
That's not very nice.
Wow.
What about bald guys with beards? That's why I have the beard anyway. I want to make sure people know that, hey, man, I can, you know. And the other thing I like about this beard is I put my, like, for example, I'll take my hand, I put it in my goatee here, and it's thick. Yeah. I've always wanted to have that up here in my head. You know what I mean? I've always wanted to put my head in my hair and, like, had all thickness back then. I haven't had that in, like, you know, 30 years. It's not good. It's a curse.
That's okay. Yeah. I would have a beard if I can grow it, but if I was allowed to.
Okay, fair enough.
If I wasn't on air, I would have a beard.
Okay.
It
is a good cop-out, by the way. You can use that excuse that, you know, if I could have one, I would.
Don't tell everyone my plan.
Hey, guys, we're Sports Saturday. We're here every Saturday from 10 to noon here on Sports Saturday, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Thanks for hanging with us. We had a great talk with Mike Ruzioni. Unbelievable conversation. 1980 U.S. men's hockey team gold medal winner and captain. Jen McCaffrey, Red Sox beat writer, joined us. And we talked UVM hoops with UVM insider from the Free Press, Alex Abrami. We'll be back next week from 10. I won't be, but Bernie will be here next week. You and Bernie run this show tomorrow, Aaron.
Sure do.
All right, guys, have a great weekend. Go Cats, go tomorrow. Lock up this America East thing. Jack, thanks so much, my man.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you again down the road. Have a safe trip today. Bye, guys.